You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Red Hook Road is the latest book from Eilert Wildman, the author of Daughter's Keeper, Love and Other Impossible Pursuits, a collection of essays called Bad Mother, and a series called The Mommy Track Mysteries. When the novel opens, it's the wedding day of a happy young couple. Their future looks bright until the limo bringing them to the reception crashes and they're both killed. What follows is an exploration of the impact on their families afterward. It's published by Doubleday, and I'm very pleased that it brings Eilert Wildman back to our show. Hi.
Hi, it's so nice to be back.
Now, there are a lot of clashes between the families in this book, class differences, religion, education. What issues was that the point? Were you thinking about exploring all of those things? Did this give you an excuse to do that?
You know, it's funny how a book starts. I mean, this book really started for me with the accident. I read about it. It actually happened, I think, in Queens, I want to say, or the Bronx, somewhere between 5 and 10 years ago. And I always say I read about it in a newspaper, but my husband insists that that's not the way it happened, and his memory is better than mine. He says we were driving in the car, and we heard the story on the radio, and we looked at each other and shouted at the same time, "Dibs." And then ultimately, I won. That's actually a better story than I just read it.
Is that what happens with writers?
Oh, absolutely. We're always, you know.
Whoever gets the newspaper first gets that story.
Exactly. Except then we have these long, complicated sort of debates about, you know, is it a you story or a me story? And I do remember saying to him, this is more of a, you know, if they were, I don't know, escape artists and they got killed in the car accident, maybe you could have it. But this is, or superhero, this is my story. This is definitely more of an Eilert story. And so I started with that, and then I wanted to write about Maine because we've been spending our summers there, and the class dynamic in Maine is so complicated and so juicy that I knew I had to address that. And I was afraid to. You know, the first thing that happened was I lost a friend of mine who is from Maine. When she found out I was writing a book about that's set in Maine, told me without, you know, that I absolutely was not permitted to. It was not allowed. How dare I? Only Mainers could write about Maine.
And ridiculous. Isn't that,
yeah, I thought so too.
I was thinking the other day about Saul Bellow and Henderson the Rain King, which is set in Africa. He had not been to Africa. Was he not allowed to write that great book?
Exactly. Although I would bet you that people from Maine are more territorial than anyone in the entire continent of Africa is.
Yeah, but people from Maine write about other parts. Stephen King writes about other parts of the world.
He mostly writes about Maine, though. I haven't asked, you know, I haven't found out whether Stephen King thinks it's okay that, you know, since he is sort of the ect Maine writer, whether he thinks it's okay for other people to poach his territory. But, you know, what the heck?
Well, we don't get to spend much time with this couple, but they seem quite idyllic while their family members are rather flawed and human. If they had lived, would they have remained so likable?
No, I think everybody is both likable and unlikable and complicated, and it's usually only after our death that, or before our birth, that we are sort of in that pure state of you know, all of our flaws disappear and only our virtues express themselves. Well, I think you're seeing John and Becca through the eyes of their family after they've died, so that's why they seem so marvelous.
Well, you have taken a fair amount of heat for writing about your seemingly perfect marriage to Michael Chabon, the novelist. Did that have anything to do with your decision to kill off the newlyweds at the start of the novel?
That's a good question. I like that. You know, the person who saw Michael and me walking down 72nd Street scolding our teenager would probably not think we had an idyllic family or an idyllic marriage. But, you know, maybe that's what I'm trying to do. Marriages in the book that the people who are still alive are much more complicated.
But you're a parent of four children. Could you have written you're writing about Maine, even though you only spend a little amount of time there. But could you have written as knowingly about parents' grief over losing a child before you had children of your own?
I don't know. You know, I hate to say it. There's this whole this canard, write what you know. And I always feel like if we really paid attention to that, you would only be talking about books about young people living in Iowa and recently finishing the. I mean, we can't write what we know because it's too boring. I mean, you have to write what you're able to imagine. And I feel like if you've loved someone, you can imagine loss.
Actually, Annie Proulx says the best advice is to write what you don't know, because that's what writing is all about. It's discovering things.
Absolutely.
And inventing things. But, I mean, don't learn about it along the way.
Right.
But
I mean, that's
if you're just writing autobiographical novels all the time, well, unless you're living an incredible life.
Right, exactly. And writers don't – I mean, the truth is what writers do all day is sit alone in a room. So their lives are not – unless they, you know – drink themselves into interesting lives, there's not that much going on that is a source of great fascination. I mean, there's classical music in this book, and I am actually one of those few people who is genuinely tone deaf. Like, I actually am tone deaf. So I've never listened to classical music.
Why include it?
Because I wanted to learn about it. Because I wanted to know the difference between, you know, Mozart and Bach. And really, I know that sounds crazy, but before I began researching this book, I started with Classical Music for Dummies, a fine volume, actually. I moved up to the Idiot's Guide, and then I went from there. And I learned about boxing for this book, and I learned about wooden boat building. A friend of mine who was a sailor, we were just talking last night, and I said, so did I get it right? Did I get all the boat stuff right? And he said, I couldn't believe it, because you are the person who refuses ever to get on a boat, and you got all that right.
So you read Boating for Dummies as well?
Yeah, unfortunately, Wooden Boat Craft for Dummies did not exist, although maybe I should write it now.
One of our characters brings up the saying, God gives us only as much as we can handle.
Yes.
Well, you're saying, obviously, that's not true.
Yeah, that's baloney. That is my least favorite. That is the thing. I think if there's a volume out there, what not to say to people who have experienced grief, it is that.
Now, you said it in Maine, as you said, some Mainers got upset, but it follows a kind of a tradition of
one Mainer.
Sprawling family story set in New England.
Right. I think there's a long tradition of books like that. I mean, and I've always loved those New England sagas.
Also a tradition of writing family sagas set in California, where you live.
That's true.
Couldn't you have done that?
I'll do that next time.
Did this have to be in Maine?
Well, this one had to be in Maine because I had all these research, you know, these family vacations, and I had to deduct them somehow from my taxes. No, I love Maine. I wanted to write about this place that I had fallen in love with. And there'll be other – I wrote a book set in California, Daughter's Keeper, set in California. But I do have to say that the high point for me of this book was when the great aunt of a friend of mine she's never lived anywhere else. As soon as there were land grants in Maine, she got one. I think, you know, only the Passamaquoddy have a better claim to that area of the country than she does. And she said that I got that right. I got the class differences, and I got the sort of feel of the place. And that was a high point for me.
And is there a place called Red Hook, Maine?
No, there's no Red Hook, Maine.
Because there are a lot of Red Hooks. I remember reading that Mary Gateskill, the writer, lived in Red Hook, and I thought – I was living in Red Hook, Brooklyn at the time. I thought, gee,
I've never seen her around.
I haven't seen her at Fairway or anything like that. And it turned out, of course, there's a Red Hook, New York.
We live – the place that we go to in Maine is there are tons of writers. I mean, the place is really – you can't lob a rock into the bay without nailing, you know, Pat Conroy on the head. So it is really – and there's a gentleman's agreement not to name it so that you won't – you know, E.B. White set Charlotte's Web in this town, and all of these great stories take place there. But there's this kind of – there's a fear that if we, you know, if we say where it is, then people will come and the real estate prices will go up and all of us writers won't be able to afford it anymore or something like that. But anyway, I had to change the name because I didn't want to be ostracized.
Now, there's a whole thing about names here as well. Rebecca and her mother, who's a feminist scholar, have an argument before Rebecca dies, over
whether Becca will take her husband's last name, which to her mother, who did take her husband's name because she's older and she got married in a period where that was the thing that you did, she's horrified at the prospect that her daughter, who's born into this kind of – this era of feminism, will take her husband's name. And it enrages her to think that her daughter will do that.
Well, we're seeing this is something that's fluctuated over the years.
Absolutely.
Your parents' generation took the husband's mm-hmm. name. And then there was a period where women just maintained their so-called maiden names. I never
took my husband's name, and although I got to tell
you,
Chabon's a nicer name than Waldman, and it's also it's located in the middle of the shelf in the bookstore. Waldman is like way on the bottom, down. Nobody could ever see those. So if I really
a couple of XYZs below you,
exactly. It's brutal. It's brutal down at the end of the alphabet. No, but you know what's funny is I think that more and more young women are in fact going back to taking their husband's name, even young women who are perfectly happy to call themselves feminists. So I don't know. I mean, I think the whole hyphenating problem was very untenable. My children just have my husband's last name as their last name because I couldn't see giving them Waldman Chabon and then having them marry like Finkelstein Rubenstein and then having it be Waldman Chabon Finkelstein. It just seemed like there was only so far that could go.
My guess is I let Waldman, whose latest novel is Red Hook Road, published by Doubleday. You began your career as a criminal defense attorney, didn't you?
I did.
And now we see so many lawyers, especially criminal defense attorneys, turning to writing. But I know you have a series of mysteries, mm-hmm. but most of them are just write criminal whodunits.
Right. That's the way I started. I started writing the murder mysteries, which were very sort of autobiographical in the sense that they drew from my experience at the Federal Public Defender's Office, some of the exact cases. Very quickly, I got bored. I got bored with that milieu. I got bored with writing about lawyers. And each book has sort of gotten farther and farther away from lawyers. And there are no lawyers. Well, there's one law professor in Red Hook Road. And in the book that I'm writing now, there isn't a lawyer to be found.
Do you think that your experience as a lawyer has influenced your writing?
Yeah, you know, everyone always gives lawyers grief for not being able to write, but I actually think that lawyers can be very, very good writers. I mean, you write all – that's what you do. People imagine that you're in court all day long and arguing Prop 8 before the Ninth Circuit. And you know what you're really doing is you're writing brief after brief after brief after brief and memorandum after memorandum. So I wrote – you know, I was a criminal defense attorney, so a lot of my – I always said that I never wrote fiction before my murder mysteries, except that I wrote these very elaborate, you know, sentencing memoranda begging the judge to let my guilty clients go. And if those weren't fiction, what else?
But there's another side to that. I would think that lawyers and doctors mm-hmm. both think a lot about what goes on in the minds of other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly. I mean, that's – your job is to figure
actors
out –
Actors also.
Yeah, I imagine that's true, although you don't see that many actor novelists. A few of them. James Franco. Who else?
Well, James Franco is the latest, yeah. But there have been some
there have been
over
others.
The years, or they've written plays or whatever.
I mean, you do – you also live in this world of – particularly if you're in criminal defense of the kind of the worst that someone can do, the worst that someone can feel, the worst that they can imagine, and that's great turf. To get used to thinking that way is really great turf for a novelist.
So are you working on another novel now?
I am. I'm in the thick of another novel it takes place in partly in Salzburg in 1945. It's about
Do Austrians know that you're doing this and are they giving you permission?
Exactly. I don't think the Austrians care so much. Not as much as the Mainers. It's about the Hungarian gold train, which if you don't know is this train full of the property of Hungarian Jewry that kind of perambulated around Middle Europe at the very end of the war, one step ahead of all the various armies until the Hungarian Arrow Cross members who were guarding the train suddenly realized when the Allies won that perhaps being in possession of the entire property of 500,000 dead Jews was not going to do them any favors when it came time to, you know, war crimes trials. So they turned it over to the Americans. And the novel is about the train, and it's about a young American officer and I'm having a great time researching it.
But this is not a story that you and Michael fought over.
No. You know, I got this story. I'll tell you how I got this story. I know it sounds so crazy where ideas come from, but a friend of mine had just been appointed ambassador to Hungary, and I really, really wanted to visit her. And I knew that the only way I could sort of tolerate abandoning my four children to go on a, you know, jaunt to Hungary was to have a reasonable research excuse. So I actually – and I knew that I wanted to write something. You know, every Jewish writer has to write something about the Holocaust at some point. It's like a rite of passage, tiresome as that might be. So I Googled Hungary Holocaust, and I don't know anything about art. And like music, I wanted to learn about art, so I put in art. And in the space of about 30 seconds, I got the hit of Hungarian Gold Train. I thought, there's my novel.
I think Google is going to start demanding part
royalties
from
absolutely.
Writers.
Absolutely. It should. It should.
Meanwhile, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Waldman's latest book is called Red Hook Road. It's published by Doubleday.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure again.
It's so nice to be here.